we'll go ahead and call the case, but don't feel that you're in a hurry, and I'll just have a few remarks. All right, Marshall, you can go ahead and call the second case on today's calendar.
Case number A230535, Board of Directors Colony by Green Townhome Association v. Santo Petro.
Good morning, Council. Welcome. Yes, take a seat, and we have plenty of time, so. So the second case has been called on today's calendar. We do have three arguments on the calendar today. This is the second one. It's been called. I see Councilor settling into table. And while you do that, I'll just make just a couple of quick remarks. You probably already know this information, but just to make sure we're all on the same page. As I think you know, today's proceedings are recorded. An audio recording becomes available on the court's website. And so we ask you to identify yourself as well as the client you represent before you start your remarks. And then secondly, please pay attention on the podium, which, by the way, it's adjustable up and down. So take a second if you want to make it more comfortable for you, because that's the whole point, there is a clock on the podium that will tell you your time as it's counting down. And we just ask you to keep your eye on it, because we do enjoy the conversation, and we look forward to talking to you about this case. So with that, counsel for appellant, if you think you're ready, go ahead. But if you want to adjust the podium, please do that as well.
I'm pretty short, but I think this should be okay. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lindsay Larson, and I am here on behalf of appellant Jackie Santo Petro, who is here today with us this morning. And Ms. Santo Petro is a homeowner within the colony by the Greens Town Home Association, and we're here because of her deck. She made a reasonable request through her HOA to build a small deck behind her home. Of the 32 homes in the association, 24 have decks. For whatever reason, the association does not want hers to be the 25th deck. And if the court would like to see a picture of her deck, you can turn to page 8 of appellant's opening brief, and you can see pictures of her neighbor's decks on pages 6 and 7 of the opening brief. Now, the association's bylaws allow for construction of improvements to the common areas with written consent from the board. And if a homeowner submits a construction request to the board but doesn't receive a response within 60 days, the owner may move forward with construction.
Counsel, I have two questions. Why would your client seek permission if the argument is that 3.2D allows the building of a deck? That's my first question.
The argument is that Section 3.2D allows for construction of improvements, and it's not to say that a homeowner could go out and just build a horse stable or a chicken coop without asking. There is a process outlined in the bylaws for which a homeowner can seek approval. And so we're saying there is certainly, that's a necessary step in before moving forward with construction. So it's not to say that you can just build whatever you want without asking.
All right. Then my next question is that if the August 6th, 2020, which is kind of the focus here of the request or letter, whatever it was, if the feeling was that after 60 days went by that consent was issued or that she could go ahead and build the deck, then why make another request in May of 21?
Ms. Santo Petro, she made several requests, as the court is aware, and if anything, she was doing her due diligence. She understood that there was a process for which a homeowner should seek approval in order to move forward with the construction. And while that first request was denied, that second request still was left hanging out there. She thought she'd submit another and started to come up with the plan in order to supply the materials, get the resources necessary, and ended up moving forward in 2022.
So. Agreed, but there was a third request, right? If you count August of 20, August 6th of 20 as a request, then there was still a third request, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And Ms. Santo Petro wanted to do the right thing. She wanted to make sure that she had approval from the board, even though she knew that she still was going to be able to move forward with the construction, given their non-response to that second letter.
But that third request was denied, right?
It was. Which, you know, for one reason or another, the association doesn't want her to have the deck, even though a lot of other neighbors have decks. And importantly, the board didn't voice one reason why she couldn't build the deck beyond the fact that they just said she can't build on the common elements, which...
Well, didn't they say that the sunroom used up all the available space?
Per their, I guess, subjective conceptualization, all the available space. I'm not sure what available space means to them, but to, if you look at the photo of the deck, there's a ton of available space. It's on a golf course. It's a pretty expansive lot, a lot of green space, a lot of trees. And you can see that it goes, you know, maybe 50 feet further than beyond the actual townhomes themselves. So available space is, I suppose, in dispute at this point. But per the association, yes, they did say that her sunroom used up the available space that she had. That's not to say that there wasn't more. And technically, all the other neighbors also have more available space, if you look at it that way as well. And the biggest issue that we see with the way the association went about this is that they simply said, you can't build on the common areas, when the bylaws plainly allow for that. And they needed to take that one step further. Section 3.2 says that an owner has the right of overhang and encroachment of improvements, and while that is wordy, it still means that you've got that right to encroach upon the common areas. And
so, Council, if you don't mind, I'll interrupt you there, just because I do struggle with your reading of Section 3.2D. So if it creates a right of overhang and encroachment, which are inconsistent with the use of the common area. So I'm reading it literally as opposed to the way the district court did. So doesn't that mean that other owners within the townhouse association would be able to encroach upon your clients, the common areas outside your client's home? So someone could build a deck right in front of her or behind, wherever, but yeah.
If you do read that literally, the encroachment of improvements on a lot which are inconsistent with the use of common areas by other members, that it could mean that.
Well, I mean, how could that possibly be what was intended? I mean, explain it to me. I mean, tell me how a homeowners association could work, operate under that kind of language, give rights to everyone to conflict with everyone else's rights. I mean, that's just not, in my experience, having looked at a fair number of association agreements, that's just not, it's not practical. It's not a practical reading.
What we take Section 3.2 to mean is simply that it's a small provision in the bylaws that allow for construction to the common areas, and it doesn't go, that are inconsistent with the use by other members. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, that again, that you can go build a horse stable, you could build a chicken coop, you could build whatever you want. There are other provisions in the bylaws that limit 3.2's application, namely, I think Section 3.3E grants, yes, an exclusive easement to the common areas and other appurtenances which are part of the original construction of any improvement or which are added pursuant to the architectural control, which architectural control is, I want to say, Section 7 of the bylaws. Mm-hmm. And there they outline things that would limit Section 3.2. So, you're right on its face. It seemingly is extremely inconsistent with what they would have intended. But
well, and I guess I'll push you a little on that, Council. I don't know that I'd say it's just inconsistent. It literally isn't granting a right, because how can one owner have a right to encroach on another owner where the other owner also has the right to encroach?
Can I speak?
No, you may not. We're going to have Council argue the case today. All right. And you can discuss your question with Council later. All right. So, Council, do you understand my question? If you don't, I'll let you move on. I want to give you time to finish your argument.
No, I understand it. I think that you're right. Either way, no matter how you slice it, Section 3.2 is not well written. It doesn't. If anything, it is susceptible to multiple interpretations. And if you read it how the district court wrote it, by inserting "not inconsistent," then
well, I guess I'm what I'm trying to say, and maybe I'm not making sense, is that it, not that it's ambiguous. Rather, I'm asking you how it could be a reasonable interpretation to give inconsistent a right of encroachment that is inconsistent. I mean, how is that giving any party anything?
I think any improvement that would go beyond the original confine or the confines of the original construction is going to be inconsistent with the use of common areas by other members, because technically, as it stands, her deck is a common area. So you could say that maybe if her neighbor were to also build a deck right next door, they too would be able to encroach on that common area. I don't think that the provision is necessarily trying to delineate which common areas you can build on, just the fact that you can build on those common areas with board approval. And with regard to the district court's reading of that section, if you read it how the district court rewrote it, it essentially means the standard's not saying anything that encroaches on the common areas is a no. It's that construction is allowed on the common areas unless it's inconsistent with the use of common areas by other members. And no doubt the board has discretion to approve or deny of construction plans, but that discretion is not unlimited. The bylaws provide that right of overhang and encroachment of improvements, and the board would then have to determine whether that improvement is inconsistent or consistent with the use of common areas by other members. But there's nothing in the record that supports the board's denial of her request. And so what is inconsistent with the use of common areas by other members mean that becomes a question of fact if you read it how the district court wrote it. And whether out of ignorance or maliciousness, the board ignored its own standard in denying her request. The board said she can't build the deck because she can't use the common areas for her personal use. Full stop. That was it. But that's not what the bylaws say. The bylaws say you can. And in every subsequent denial of her request, that's simply what the board voiced. It was a no, you can't build on the common elements, when, again, the bylaws clearly say that you do. And that's really why we're here today, is that while our position is that Section 3.2 is unambiguous, the district court, with all due respect to the court, they have a ton of things coming across their docket every single day, and they simply got this one wrong. You just can't insert a word into a provision that is that at least is unambiguous as written.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page on something. I think we are, but I just want to confirm. So you can't build a deck unless you either get board approval or 60 days go by without the board responding.
Correct.
Okay.
And if I could, Council, follow up on Judge Schmidt's question. So 60 days. I'm looking at the provision, which I think is in the addendum at 26, so an 8.2. I know you're familiar with the language, but if you want to take a second to take a look at it. So subparagraph B is where that 60-day provision is, and it says that if the board of directors fails to approve or disapprove within 60 days after receipt of said plans and specifications and all other information requested by the board of directors. And there's more, but I think that's the relevant part. So you emphasize the August 6th letter, right? When did the 60 days start, based on the language?
Based on the language
in 8.2b.
Following the submission of that August 6th letter. So
it's not what the language says. It's after receipt of said plans and specifications and all other information. So when did the 60 days start?
The 60 days started then by that reading, after receipt of the plans, which they received on, maybe that was July of 2020. I want to make sure I have the right date here, with the date of her first request, which was somewhere between June.
But they denied her first request. The board denied her first request.
They did, but that's when she submitted her plans, and those plans hadn't changed between the first and second requests. So
I'm struggling with that interpretation of 8.2. You can see why, I think. So when is a board done? I mean, when would a denial be effective? If the 60 days is just continuously able to be re-triggered by someone submitting a letter,
That is a good question. It's technically, as written, then the board's never done. They would then have to continue to, consider and respond to requests. Now, if, say, in someone submits 80 requests over and over again, then I think there would be room for conversation as to whether or not that person is abusing their abilities through the bylaws as a homeowner to bog the board down with all sorts of requests. But she didn't submit 80 requests, she submitted 3. And while while the board did have a duty to respond to each of those, they simply didn't respond to the second one. And they had plenty of time to do it, but again, for whatever reason, they don't want her to have this deck, and they let it hang out there. And she had already submitted those plans. She submitted another request. Everything in that August 6th letter points to the fact that it was a request. She refers to the detailed plan she submitted, and she asked the board to do the right thing and approve her plans, and that's a request. And she even testified in her declaration that she understood that letter to be a request. And so what the court did was found the letter wasn't a request meriting response, and therefore made her a factual finding in direct conflict with record testimony. So the record shows the parties reasonably dispute whether that letter was a request meriting a response, and that's a material fact that just can't be decided at the summary judgment stage. And whether or not the board had a duty to respond to that, that's something that, again, that's a question of fact. And
I think your argument might be stronger had she started building 60 days after that denial, but then there's a third request which mm-hmm. was denied.
And, you know, the lag between that time of building and time of submission of the request, the only thing that I could say is that it takes time to source materials, especially in a pandemic era. We were, there were a lot of labor shortages, there were material shortages. She wanted to make sure that she had all the necessary labor and materials ready at her disposal in order to construct that deck properly, which she did. It's a lovely composite material. It matches that of her neighbors, and she took her time to make sure that she was going to build the deck that she wanted. But indeed, there was quite a bit of lag time between when she, in theory, could have begun moving forward with that deck and when she actually did. And I see my time is up. Yeah. So
well, thank you, counsel. And you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose. Counsel for respondent, are you ready?
May it may it please the court. I'm Stephen Conroy. I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent in this matter. Just to address one thing very quickly, counsel stated that in some respects the appellant here was being treated unfairly because everybody else, or almost everybody else, has a deck. That there's information that we've submitted to the court that clarifies that very, very easily, in the sense that none of the townhomes have a sunroom and a deck. It's an either-or proposition. The appellant in this matter has gone beyond that. She has her sunroom, and then she built a patio that extends 12 by 24 feet more than any other unit in the townhome association.
Was the sunroom part of the original construction for that townhome?
No. So again, there was, she was not being treated unfairly. She's the only one now who has a sunroom and a deck. Looking at the
Counsel, can I ask, where in the record would we find that the it was not part of the original construction?
I don't know that you would find it in the record.
Okay.
I don't. The appellant argues that essentially 3.2D allows her almost a blank check in terms of utilizing the common areas for improvements.
Counsel, on that issue, as long as we're on 3.2D again, the court apparently found the provision to be confusing but not ambiguous. Do you agree with that?
No, I think the court found that it was ambiguous and confusing and nonsensical.
Well, confusing and nonsensical, but was there ever a finding that it was ambiguous?
I think in the court's order there is a finding that is ambiguous.
Well, let's just take a moment for that, counsel, and assume for a second that the district court did not find it to be ambiguous.
I think on page 8 of the addendum, it says, the court says, it does not render the entire contract ambiguous.
So how does that affect your argument?
I'm sorry, what was that, Your Honor?
On page 8 of the addendum, the court wrote, while the wording of section 3.2D is confusing, it does not render the entire contract ambiguous.
Correct.
Right. Okay, we're back to where I was, which is that there's a finding that that language is confusing, but not necessarily ambiguous. So the court reformed the contract.
I think what the district court, what that refers to is that although that clause may be ambiguous or nonsensical.
Well, there's a difference, though.
The contract as a whole is not. 3.2D, nonsensical, ambiguous,
okay,
doesn't render
the whole
contract.
Let me phrase the question, counsel. The question is this. If we are correct on our end that the court did not find that provision to be ambiguous, should we be troubled by the fact that the court reformed an unambiguous contract on summary judgment?
I think the court, the district court, can look at the entire contract, the declaration, and look at the intent of the parties based on the terms of that contract, and make reasonable rulings based on that. So I think the district court could do that based on the intent of the parties, based on the reading of the entire contract, not just 3.2D.
So, counsel, if I may follow up, did your client make a request to reform the contract? I guess my understanding was different, so help me out there. To add the word not is what I'm saying. Did you make a request to the district court to add the word not to 3.2?
No.
So what was your position in summary judgment?
Our position in summary judgment was that 3.2D was not clear, and that based upon the other terms in that declaration, specifically 3.6, 7.11, and Section 8 as well. All of those provisions show the intent of the parties that a person, an homeowner, cannot build on the common area without permission of the board.
Appellant's counsel doesn't disagree with that. I mean, appellant's counsel is saying that with the exception of this 60-day approval exception, that in fact, you know, approval is needed. I think the point that appellant is making from 3.2 has to do with whether there is a right to encroach. So would you address that? What was your position on that at summary judgment? Whether homeowners in the association have a right to encroach on other homeowners' property, or not on the other property, on the common area, excuse me.
All right.
Yeah.
Our position in the district court was that the terms of the contract, the declaration, considered as a whole, was perfectly clear. You know, there were some inconsistencies or confusion, whether you want to call it nonsensical, as the district court did, relating to 3.2D, these other detailed provisions in these sections 3.6, section 7, and 8 do set forth in clear terms what the requirements are to seek approval and the basis for what that approval might be granted or denied. So, alternately, the appellant here states that the board did not follow through and reject the what they characterize as a request or reconsideration of the original rejection of the first request. So the first request was made on June 25th, 2020. That was rejected. There's no argument about that. There was another request made about 9 months later on, with plans and specifications on May 5th, 2021. That was rejected on June 24, 2021. In between then, and actually just 2 weeks after the initial request was submitted, the appellant here, as you are aware, submitted another letter or a letter dated June 6th, 2020, just 2 weeks again after the original rejection, essentially saying, I disagree. I think you're wrong. Reconsider my prior offer or my prior request.
Well, you're paraphrasing, I think, counsel, though.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, the letter does close with a specific request to approve, doesn't it?
Right, approve the plans that were...
Now I am quoting. Otherwise, please do the appropriate thing and approve the request. So there is a statement in the August 6th letter that asked the board to approve the request to allow the deck to proceed, right?
Based on prior plans and specifications submitted a couple months, well, I was maybe a month or so earlier, based on the plans and specifications that were submitted with the first request. What the declarations provide is that the board has to either accept or reject plans within 60 days of the time those plans and specifications were submitted. The board did that. They got the first request, they with the plans and specifications, those were rejected. Thereafter, 2 weeks after those plans and specifications were rejected by the board, the appellant in this matter essentially said, please reconsider. The board did what they were required to do. They rejected the plans and specification within 60 days of the time those plans and specifications were submitted. There's no provision, and I would suggest that it's not reasonable to require the board to reject or approve the same plans twice within 2 weeks. That's just not a requirement. The plans and specifications were submitted and denied. The board's not required to do that twice for essentially the identical request. Although there's some dispute over the what does 3.2D mean, it is, we believe, as the district court found, nonsensical. It's confusing. And so we have to look for the contract as a whole, whether that lends any clarity to that provision and whether the board, in fact, did follow the provisions set forth in the declarations.
So help me out, counsel. If I look at the contract as a whole, what is the meaning of the language in 3.2 that says the right of overhang and encroachment of improvements on a lot which are inconsistent with the use of the common areas? What is the right that's being given in 3.2D?
I think that's confusing in itself, but in terms of the request for improvements, I think the overarching and very clear provisions of the declaration in terms of submitting requests and the requirement of doing that essentially set forth in very clear terms that you cannot go forward without permission of the board to build or make improvements on the common areas. Provision.
That D does not refer to approval, correct?
Pardon me?
3.2D doesn't actually refer directly to approval. No. That's why my question to you was asking you to describe the right that's given, as opposed to telling me about other provisions that affect the right. Does my question make sense? Maybe it doesn't.
Sure. I think it does. And I think that provision simply is confusing, and it is nonsensical. But it doesn't prevent the other terms that are detailed in great detail, I guess I put it that way, as to what's required to have a request considered by the board. The board did what it was supposed to do. It responded to all the plans and specifications that they were given on two different occasions, not on August 6th. And therefore, the terms of 3.2D, while confusing, while perhaps nonsensical, doesn't override all of the detailed provisions that are set forth in the declarations. I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your argument.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah. Counsel for Repellent, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, so with regard to Section 3.2D, I know that we've discussed this at length now, and want to just clarify that no one is saying that Section 3.2D allows any owner to just build whatever they want. There are other sections in the declaration that limit Section 3.2D's application. And namely, if you look at Section 8, addendum page 25 of Appellant's addendum, architectural control has several different provisions that outline even specifically the requirements for approval of a deck. Specifically that any easement for a deck or patio other than as originally constructed shall be approved by the board, and that it needs to be a certain size, location, type, design in relation to existing improvements in topography, adequate protection of the property and the association. And again, Ms. Santopietro did her due diligence in ensuring that she was using a high-end composite material and that her deck matched the others in the association. And the whole point is that Section 3.2D is unambiguous. The court said so itself, and yet the court still rewrote that provision and then used that holding to grant summary judgment in the association's favor, which was inappropriate at the summary judgment stage. And whether or not Section 3.2 makes is well written, it still makes sense in connection with the other provisions in the bylaws that limit its application.
So, counsel, your alternative position on 3.2 is that it is ambiguous, right?
Sure. And yeah. So if it is ambiguous, then that becomes a question of fact for the jury to decide.
Right, and that's what I wanted to ask you about is what is the evidence that you would suggest a jury should look at apart from the other provisions in the bylaws and declarations.
I think they would need to ask the board who was who has either approved of or denied previous alterations. I'm sure there have been. I don't know off the top of my head what those would have been, but there should be other evidence of who, whenever the sunrooms were added, for instance, what was the process?
Counsel, did you present that evidence on summary judgment? Wasn't that your obligation?
I mean, on summary judgment?
Right, in response to the motion for summary judgment by the board. I mean, I'm not asking you in the abstract what is the evidence. I'm literally asking what is the evidence in the record.
I do not believe there's any record evidence that discusses any other improvements or other previous construction that that occurred. Only depositions of a board member and who was discussing the deck at issue. So other than that, it would be their testimony as to how they understand the bylaws are constructed, and which that is in the record, and the declarations of other members of the association and Ms. Santopietro's declaration as well, which were all submitted in support and opposition to summary judgment.
So I think if I understand what you're saying is if I turn to the depositions that were filed in response to summary judgment, I'll see testimony that suggests what individual board members and Ms. Santopietro and perhaps others, townhouse association members, what they think the meaning is of 3.2?
Correct.
Okay. And so could you help me out there from your side? What did they think? What does the evidence show?
I would say that I don't know that they necessarily understand what 3.2 means either. So in that case, perhaps it is ambiguous. When each deponent was asked what they think Section 3.2 means, that they were asked, does this allow you to build on the common elements? Each one said no. And whether or not they were coached to say that, I don't know. But they all seemed to be vehemently opposed to any construction on the common elements, despite that's what the bylaws say in multiple different places. So I don't know that the board necessarily understands its own bylaws. And again, they're it's a group of people that are trying to read a somewhat wordy document, but ultimately they have the discretion to approve or deny based on the bylaws, and they misread them themselves and ignored their own bylaws in denying her requests each time when, again, the bylaws specifically allow for construction of improvements to the common areas, and they summarily said no without more. And that was a misreading and misinterpretation of those bylaws by the board. And I see my time is up.
Any further questions from the panel? Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both lawyers in this case. This matter has been briefed and submitted to the court. We will issue a written decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you very much.